Okay, I'm going to call the meeting to order. I guess we'll start off with the roll.
Lynn Dolesky.
Here.
Fred Franco.
Here.
Mike Vogt appears to be absent. Rick Gilmore.
Here.
Karen Dutcher.
Here.
Matt Cooper.
Here.
Chair Al Kazakowicz.
Here. All right, there are two items of business on the, well, one item of business and one item for discussion on the agenda tonight. The first is to consider an application for a special use permit for a shed from Adam Matthews, who I'm assuming is not here, unless you're Adam Matthews.
No.
But I think not, because Rick seemed to recognize you, so. And the other is informal discussion about procedures with the code office and some members of the Zoning Board of Appeals. I guess the first thing I'm going to ask before we even... Well, let me ask this. Everyone's had a chance to look at the application. Does everyone agree that it's complete?
I've kind of got a question. I don't understand. I'm not entirely convinced that the... shed is correctly located in relationship to the wetlands. I can't quite interpolate where that is from the surveyed engineer drawing to this one. He's got wetlands and a bridge notated, which I
don't... It's got 50 feet.
Yeah, and it is noted that, but I mean, I don't know if that's critical enough that it requires, it has to be a engineer drawing.
It might become a moot point depending upon the rest of the discussion. So other than that, which may be more of a item for clarification, is there any other, you know, is there any information missing in terms of the application packet? I just want to be able to say, yeah, the application's complete. The clock starts as far as the 239M review goes. And hearing no objections, I guess so noted. My first question is,
so
I guess...
So you declared it complete?
Yes. Okay. No one's objected, so we'll declare it complete. As far as we're concerned, like I said, it might become a moot point. I guess to Jennifer, first of all, my understanding... And I think I understand it, given the amount of palaver there's been around the subject, is, you know, first of all, it's a shed, it's over 100 square feet, therefore it's classified as an accessory structure. Accessory structures, unless they're, at least the way it's being interpreted by at least some members of the code office, if they're not over 1,300 and whatever that number is,
1,200,
whatever, square feet, then it's just a plain old accessory structure and it's not allowed because it's not accompanied by a residence. So if that's the case, and I'm sort of throwing this open to everybody, Jennifer and the rest of the board, I don't think we should be looking at this. I think this should go to the ZBA.
What's that?
This didn't go there?
It's not allowed.
It's not allowed.
Right.
Right.
Not even a special use permit.
It's allowed along with the residence with a special use permit. Go ahead, jump in. Join the lovely conversation.
I want to look at the definition for accessory structure.
Go ahead.
Because I thought,
well, is this a standalone accessory?
Yeah,
structure?
It is, yes. Because there's no other, there's no...
So
development on the property
so
at all.
So according to this, after discussion with the planning board, we can allow it only on special use permit.
Yeah, that's proposed. That's not the law now.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what is the law now? Is it's not allowed?
Correct. That seems to be the popular interpretation of the ordinance. And I reluctantly agree that that's what the ordinance says, even if I may or may not agree that it makes sense and that's what we want.
Excuse me for a second then, Al.
Yeah?
All right, an accessory structure is any structure or a portion of a main structure customarily
incidental and subordinate to a principal land use development, and that customarily a custom is associated with such principal land use or development.
Yep.
I don't see anything there.
Well, there's nothing for it to be subordinate to.
Including a guest cottage not for rent or hire that is incidental or subordinate to and associated with a single family unit. It says customarily, it doesn't say for fire. Because by that definition, all the accessory structures were that going to the ZBA for...
No, because, again, I'm telling you what the interpretation of literally half the code office and half the planning board has been on this so far, and that is that structures that would be considered accessory are not so and not allowed if there's no primary structure. Okay. Actually, I'm looking for it right now. There's actually some additional information in one of the supplementary regulations, which I'm looking for.
I think that's what we'd like to see. I was under the impression that wasn't the case up to this point.
I would agree with what Richard said.
You could always ask for an interpretation from the ZBA.
Well, there he is.
No, a formal interpretation.
And I'm only one member of the ZBA.
Yes, you are. Well, there's Frank over there, too.
We don't have a forum.
Doug.
And
it would be a public
hearing. And the point, we need a formal request.
Anybody find the sub there? Here it is. Here.
Are you looking for principal building?
No. No. I'm also looking for.
Nervous Nelly here. I've had.
No.
Good. Still recording.
Taking pains to, maybe it's under district regulations. Does anybody know where the 1,200 square foot?
Yes,
the 1,200 square foot is in the definition of principal
building. Number 9.
Yep. And actually,
that's what I was asking if that's what you were looking for.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
On page 21.
I have a funny feeling the pages in my book are totally
facocked up. Number 9. Did you read my denial letter?
Well, I assumed, actually I did, because I assumed the denial was because it requires a special use permit. That's normally the process, so that's... Where is it?
I don't know what to do first because we're in like 3 discussions at once. I don't know what to say or not say.
Yeah, it, and that's what it says. It says basically a use listed in the use table as subject to special use permit approval for a given zoning district shall be allowed... You know, with a special use permit, which is issued by, I'm reading between the lines here, the planning board, assuming that, you know, like you said, dimensional stuff, so we're not violating coverage, setbacks are okay.
Wetlands.
Yeah.
I wish he was here, but...
So I'll circle back to the original question. Is a standalone accessory structure allowed on the lot now or not? And I'm not asking you for a determination. This is sort of thrown open to everybody because I want to understand, you know, if we should even be looking at this. Because if our interpretation is it's not allowed, it goes there.
And my reading of this of the use table says that it's allowed by special use permit.
That's what I thought.
And actually, last night, during our interpretation meeting that the ZBA had with regard to a couple other applications, somebody tried to use the 1,250 square foot criteria for putting up a garage. And I said, if there's nothing there, doesn't hold by the definition of a garage. There is no other principal building. And if you look at the definition for principal building, the last sentence says an accessory structure cannot be a principal building.
Right, and then a principal building said, and I know, I don't want to hear a bunch of, because I know the why, but it, you know, the issue is, if you look under principal building, number 9, it says if it's over 1,200 and whatever square feet, it's to be counted, for density purposes, is between the lines, but it doesn't say that there. And the code office has issued building permits for garages using exactly that criteria.
And we gave them the interpretation last night that that will not happen in the future. That is not the correct interpretation. Otherwise, what
but,
is the
But
sentence?
What's that based on?
The last sentence of the definition, which says that an accessory structure cannot be a principal building.
I know, but it says if it's over 1,200 square feet, it's a principal building, it's not an accessory structure.
No, it doesn't say that.
Well, it doesn't say what you said.
Yes, it does.
Any other structure which exceeds 1,250 feet of floor space constitutes one principal building.
Unless it's an accessory structure.
But it can't
be. It doesn't say unless. The next line says an accessory structure.
Say this, but we made the interpretation last night. That's exactly what we said.
I got to read my denial or two.
And
when the zoning ordinance was created, and I'm being typed right, when the zoning ordinance was created, it was the intention of all 5 or 6, actually, people that sat here for 3 years straight for 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours, sometimes twice a month, to not allow a garage-type, pole barn-type structure to be a standalone piece. And I can take you in my car and show you 6 to 8 places that have that are a nightmare. And if you continue to allow it, you will continue to invite blight.
Well, I
what
think
do you say, Jennifer? Why do you say a nightmare? Why do you say it's a nightmare? I just wondered why.
Legal ruling last
what do you mean by that?
That has the force of law.
So, all around it, not in it, all around it.
Just so you know.
Okay.
They're the sole arbiter of what our zoning ordinance says?
ZBA is under
Okay, then. Well, then let's consider the application. I'm not going to waste any more time. So, where are we at this? Now, you just said that a standalone accessory structure is not allowed.
I said it's not allowed to be a principal building.
So, if there's no principal building, can you have an accessory structure?
Yes. See, I don't see that.
I don't understand that at all.
That way.
No, I don't.
It strikes me that the actual use of the term accessory is by definition means there's something else there.
You guys can file for the public.
Right, accessory.
It means living quarters. The principal building is living. So the accessory structure
it isn't necessarily because the principal building in a commercial use building. Area yeah, could be a store or something. So. In the case of an auto service building, it's actually is a garage.
Or a storage. Storage sheds.
Well, if that's the way you're going to do it, then...
I'm not trying to dictate a way to do it. I'm trying to point out there's a major disconnect between how people are viewing the language in the ordinance, and I just want to know, do we get to look at this tonight or don't we get to look at this? Is it an accessory structure that is only allowed with a principal building, or is it not?
Well, according to the Fulton County Planning, you don't even get to look at it because it's declared it's complete, but you can't rule on it until...
Okay, thanks for that help, James. You know that we've always done this contingent upon them reviewing it. So if you just want to... If the whole purpose of this meeting was to waste time, then let's just all go home now.
Easy.
So are we considering this or not?
I make a motion to not consider it under the understanding that an accessory structure has to have a principal structure.
I'll second it.
Okay, discussion.
I agree.
I said it before, the use of the term accessory is by definition implies that there is a primary.
I agree, but there seems to be a lot of people who like to play fast and loose with the language in the ordinance. So I agree, that's what accessory means.
Yeah, I got a pocketbook. That's my accessory.
Yeah.
No? Very nice pocketbook. But
no, just saying.
And in all fairness, this is not unusual because this is what used to happen under the old ordinance.
What, Dom, used to happen under the old ordinance?
If somebody came in with an application for something where there was no other structure, it would get denied, and they would come for us for a use variance and have to explain to us why it was necessary. And a lot of times it was situations like this. And we had this discussion in Scott's office 5 months ago.
Yeah.
Right. It would come to the board, and we would say, they would say, I want to put up a garage, I want to put up a shed, I need to have a structure that will become an accessory because I'm going to build a house down the road.
Well, after the house, then.
And we would say, okay. And as Fred pointed out, we could put criteria on it and say, yes, we're going to approve it, but we expect to see an application for a structure for a primary building within X number of years.
The problem with that is
they won't.
The problem is policing it.
Yeah,
you know, we could. Everyone's good. They're going to say whatever they want for us to say. Go ahead and put it there. Mm-hmm. Who's going to police it? Jen and Anthony, they're going to go back 6 months later, 2 years later with the and say, well, your intent was to do this. It's really hard. Don't do it. I say police it on the front side. If they're that serious about it, submit your plans to build your house, have all that done, and then we'll say, okay, so you have your plans, you put your permit in, now you need this.
Correct. The house should come first.
How long do you want me to give him to remove this item?
What, it's been put on already?
Yeah.
I didn't even go down.
He was told that he could put it there.
Oh.
See, that's a, I mean,
wait a second.
Why are we even here?
Not me.
This is the problem.
Yeah.
This is happening all the time. This is something
really
that should change.
I honestly think that he will do everything he can to remove it. I know he wants to build there, and that was something that he looked all over for this property for years. He even did a GIF before he bought it. So I know he'll.
I just don't know why people put stuff on property and then we let him submit an application. You're in violation now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. He is.
You know, not my problem. If he's done all this research, he should have known that he needed to submit the paperwork before I just started taking action. You don't tell me that someone's so smart that they did all this, but then they just snuck this in, and then we'll fix it afterwards.
But this is constantly happening.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm not saying it's right. It needs to constantly be stopped.
No, I don't.
Well, the lake
is
a free-for-all. It's been that way, and it's got to be stopped. Or it's going to be a disgusting mess after a while.
There should be fines for this.
Right.
That's a whole other
ball
of wax.
And all that.
Well, that's the only way you're going to stop it.
Yeah, it's also out of our purview. Right. So.
But you can ask for escrow for monies put aside for teardown. That's within your legal authority.
So there's a motion before the board. Is there any further discussion? So, shall we have a vote on the motion?
I just want to question. If there is a house on another piece of property that's adjoining, that then we're talking that will be an accessory structure then?
No.
What did you say?
So, in other words, I'll give you an example. My house, I have a pole barn across on another lot. Across the street, it would not
be allowed under.
This is years ago, baby.
Oh, okay.
This
is
quiet down.
There you go. Did you get a separate tax bill?
Yeah. So, are we saying now that if you own a piece of property on the other side of the road and it has a house on it, you can't put up a garage or pole barn or an accessory structure on?
You can combine your lots and do
stuff. And that's exactly what I told Bars to do for theirs. Mm-hmm. Because I knew if they came here to do a garage on the piece of property they got from the Dulesky, without combining the lots, they'd be right where we are right now.
Right.
Right, and that's what they did.
And that's exactly what they did.
And that's what other people have done.
Yeah, and need to do.
Right, right. Absolutely.
And I'm not sure I agree with that, because it basically the combination of properties is a one-way ratchet. The way most of the zoning districts are dimensioned is the lots that are in them don't meet it. So once you combine them, you can't separate them. Which you know what? If it happens in the Dulesky's back 40, that's not a major loss. If it happens in the town center, that's a big deal because that cuts off potential for development.
But the flip side of that is you look at the avenues and you have these houses that cannot support a family, but you could buy it, tear it down, and put a little skinny place on, or you could buy two of them and put a nicer piece of property that supports a family, which then supports the school system and the community.
Right, right.
And that makes perfect sense for growing the town in the right direction.
Right. A garage isn't going to grow a town.
At any rate, I'm sorry to diverge. Let's get back to the motion. Why don't you call a roll call vote if you would, unless there's more.
What are you voting on now? Can we make that clear?
I'm paraphrasing. The motion was made to essentially kick this to the ZBA. In other words, that we're determining that this application is not appropriate under the special use permit section of the zoning ordinance.
Okay, I vote yes.
Thank you. Fred Franco.
Yes.
Rick Gilmore.
No.
Karen Dutcher.
No.
Well, wait a minute. You're saying you want us to consider it.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
So you're voting yes.
No, then you're voting yes.
Right, yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
And Rick, you understood what you were voting. Okay. Matt Cooper.
I'm a yes as well.
And Chair Alcazaco.
Yes. So.
Was that Mike?
Yeah. So that goes.
So
you can give it to that gentleman in the corner there. Yeah, Linda?
Will you be putting a stipulation in your motion that of the time frame when this structure has to be removed?
We're not even considering the application. That's up to the ZBA.
It's codes. I mean, the bottom line is codes. There's an illegal part.
Oh, as far as the structure. That's enforcement, and that's not our department. Yeah. I'm sorry, I misunderstood. All right, so that concludes the formal part of this meeting. The remainder was to have discussions between Jennifer and the members of the ZBA that are here regarding procedures. And I'm going to let someone else lead that part of the discussion, which I presume is going to be one of you three guys.
What you had said, you had proposed your spreadsheet.
Flow sheet.
You know, of what when somebody comes in, you know, going through.
Okay. I went over this with the zoning board a little bit. I just have a feeling that a lot of people involved with zoning and planning boards don't really understand how the worksheet gets created and what the steps are to get to today. And there's the zoning map from the Adirondack Park Agency's point of view. And you see that in my worksheet. I have APA land use, like low intensity use, conservation, whatever it says it is, hamlet. And then we have the zone that they're in as far as Curuba Lake is concerned. And when we take those two steps and we put everything together and decide all the numbers based on what that person has on their property, I just think that if you came in and you let one of us explain it to you and show you where we go to on the map, we could even do something right on your own property. I told the zoning board this too. It would help you understand how we get to today and made, you know, along with the book, and made the decision that this doesn't fit here, this doesn't fit there, you know what I mean, or it can fit, well, or...
One of the things that I would ask, and I think that the Zeman application, I had an epiphany as the result of that, and that is that one piece of information we don't have in front of us now on the application is the APA land use category. In other words,
you do always. I always have that there.
Where? Show me on that application where it is.
Well, on the website.
I don't look at the website. I have a. I have papers that you dropped off at my house, and that's what I'm looking at in the meeting. Now, I don't think it's on there.
See, and this is a really good thing, and even though you didn't see it, it's a good thing because this is something that, you know, you might not want
to... But you usually put on your denial.
Says,
where's
she, yep. She got... No, she doesn't have the worksheet. Here's the worksheet that
okay.
You gave me back.
Okay. I would... Yeah.
Says,
yep.
It says LFB, right? LFB and then the land... It says zoning and then APA land use. Does it say that? And you know what? I ordered one of these for you, but I'll let you see it. Remember what Robin called that map? That
hoteling chart table.
What is it? I'm going to show you mine so you guys can see it, because you've never seen it before. That's what they said. That's what one of you said. What do you call it?
Hoteling table. Yes.
H-O-T-A-L-I-N-G.
And there's a link from the code office resources page.
It tells you if something's a Class A project, a Class B project.
Oh. Well, it doesn't. You have to do some digging to figure it out. But, yeah, do you know that when you put this together?
Yes, I do. I look at that.
I would like, with on the end of a large hammer aimed right between my eyes, I would like those three things imprinted. So in other words, the local our zoning district, the APA land use area, and if it's a regional project, sort of, yeah, and then...
You know it right away?
And yeah. Well, I want somehow that screams at me on the front page, basically, that's what we're dealing with. Because we sat in a meeting here where you weren't here. Where we were going, you know, I think we're, it wasn't Carl's project. It might have been the down by Royal Mountain
yeah,
or something.
Yeah,
where we were trying to figure out, what's a Class A regional
yeah.
project? It was like, we didn't know.
Isabella.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, especially if you know that, it would be good to have that, like, right front and center with the parcel number and everything else.
Trish, when she came in, you know, and she comes in and she called several times, she wanted to know everything right away. She wants to know A, B, C, D. She wanted, her engineer called me four or five times. Everything was on the table right away. They wanted to present to you and get your feedback so that they had 3 or 4 months to come back with what they want. Carl, on the other hand, took the opposite approach. And when he came here, I asked him, I said, this is this. And I showed him that chart. This is this. And I said, do you want to do this step by step? Or do you want me to give you a ton of information today and tell you the whole story? He goes, no, no, no. He goes, I can't do that. I don't have time for that. I got to go. You know, he's picking up boats left and right all around the country. So he didn't want to know any of that. And but that doesn't have anything to do with what you want to know. And if the only thing that it might do is confuse the applicant that has already told me one way or the other what they want to do. But I will still give you guys the information on the worksheet if that's what you want.
May I also add, because APA has in their database Class A, Class B, but wetlands, height, there's a couple other variables that you might benefit from knowing if she were to supply them. I'll talk to her about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the thing about the APA, I actually have a full-size map now because somebody sent me one and I was able to print it out, but... you know, I did not realize how little overlap there was between some of our districts and some of the APA land uses. And I think because it was, this is the first time we did a project that far north in the town, you know, Carlson was the first one where it was like, crap, you know, this makes a big deal, you know, or this is a big deal, so.
So does this affect Carl's application?
Yes.
In what way?
It's a Class A project because the building was over 5,000 square feet.
So that's why
you... So what, since we had already approved it, and I have no idea if we have to revisit it with different criteria, I really don't know what's going to happen. What Carl and I agreed to was there is a bulkhead in the building where it's under 3,000
right.
square feet. Mm-hmm. He said, can I just stop it there? Otherwise, everything is the same. And I said, yeah.
Under 5,000.
Yeah.
He's commercial use.
Yep.
Okay, so then you would, whatever his thing set up here, but his, now if he wanted to be a 5,000 square foot or more, it would be Class A.
Right.
25.
And he was
if it's rural use, but this is APA low intensity.
Right.
Yeah. Which
but I have one of
for us was highway commercial. And I think all of us probably think the same way. Highway commercial at the junction of 29 and 10 is no different. In fact, it is no different in our zoning definition than highway commercial up by Stoner Lake. You know, when the reality is, no, they are a lot different because the APA considers them to be different. No, I was thinking north, way up north in the town. I don't know if there are any HCs up there. I don't think there are. Yeah.
Well, I guess if the goal is, are we trying to make the applications more comprehensive? Do they need to be referring to those tables and whatnot in part of that application? And frankly, I don't have a problem with the fact that I don't care if you're not interested in knowing what it is or not. You got to present
required.
It. You got to do it. I mean, nobody loves going through the minutia, but I mean, it's part of the process.
No, but I think what I want to avoid happening is having us not realize information that's important for us to make a decision. And that was a classic case of none of us said anything. I didn't find out about it till the day after when the APA said, oh, it's a Class A regional project. Oh. So.
Yeah, but I mean, it's our responsibility too, but it's also theirs.
Yeah, yeah.
And there may yet be wetlands issues.
Well, I was using Carl's property as, or project as an example of what not to do in the future. It's, Huh?
Saying there might be wetlands involved in it. That's
yeah.
Why.
Well, it's because the creek is there.
So how are we going to go forward with this? We're going to have more information?
Well, I didn't mean to sidetrack the whole discussion.
No, I know, but for future applications, what are we doing different so we don't do what we did?
I just want to see it all grouped together. So in other words, the zoning district, the APA, and whether or not it's a Class A or B regional
okay,
project.
And that's going to come from the
on the front page, and they, yes, Jennifer
okay.
knows.
You're going to do that. Okay. Fine.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. I actually, I ordered one of those for you, and
I have it online. One of the reasons why I sort of discounted it when I first saw it is it had George Pataki as governor listed on it. I'm thinking, how relevant is this still? That one doesn't, and it's the same.
Dolphin, so.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep it. I found two. Like, I went to the Salvation Army. Every time I go to the bank, I stop in there, and I get these posters, because they're like $75 for a poster frame. So I've gotten two so far for like $6. So once I get the third one, I'll put those maps that we have, and I'll bring them with me. And that way, when you see the worksheet, I'll walk you right through the whole thing, and you'll really understand it when you see it. You
okay.
Know?
I think that's tremendously helpful.
Yeah. Yes.
Procedure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know where we at.
You had just finished going through, you were going through.
Okay, so this worksheet, I also have a form that I sent you by email, and that just tells the step of everything that has to do with, like, everything the clerk does, everything we do, who gets a copy of what it tells. It gives you information about where the homeowner, like, their mailing address and their regular address, what they filled out. And if that was completed and you got a copy and you were missing something in your packet, you would know that you were missing something, but I don't know who's going to cross-reference all that. It's just basically to tell you everything.
You know what you can do?
To create this.
Create a checklist of the documents or the information required.
That's what that is. That's what this other thing is that I get.
But the thing is, maybe briefer than this, I'm looking for less work for you. That, you know, to put an application packet together for site plan review, you need this, 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 this. And you can just check it off. You put that in the front there. That way you know and we know you've included all the information that's required.
All right. All right. Yeah, I don't think I have anything else. But I do want you to come in if you have a question or you get paperwork and you don't understand it thoroughly and we can try to learn from it.
I do have a question or just a notice for you. Rick Sturgis dropped by today, my house. He needed the lot line amendment signed. And I was kind of surprised that you didn't have copies. Because normally I would sign it at the meeting and hand it back. It got overlooked. But he brought them. It was a Mylar, which I thought was really unusual because you don't usually see those. They're meant to be really permanent. And I signed it. It was only one copy. I want to make sure you knew I signed it and he took it away. I don't know if you're supposed to have a copy. I thought you were.
The lawyer who was ever involved was supposed to bring the three copies to me. I send you an email or call you, just like the last.
Normally, normally when we do this, usually, Foss, is it Fred? Foss.
Chris Foss.
Right.
Usually we'll see him here. He'll give them to me and I'll sign them right at the meeting. Usually three or four copies. And he
if
takes them
the
away.
Way it's got to be. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. See, he is so busy that.
And Ferguson and Foss did Rick Sturgis's too. So I'm pretty sure that's the name that was on the drawing. So that's why I was kind of surprised. There was no signature block on it. It was a Mylar. There's only one copy. He's coming to my house. No one's ever done that before. I thought it was odd.
No. I didn't tell him to do that.
No, I know. Yeah, I know you didn't, but I wanted to make sure you knew that I signed it because I think you're supposed to have copies too.
I'm supposed to have a signed copy, yeah. Huh. Jeez, and you only had one and you only signed one?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll come in and sign more, but, you know.
All right, I'll get
it. You didn't bring any beer with you, did
you? No. No. Zip in and out. If it took 3 minutes, I'd be surprised.
No, I don't have anything else other than those two forms, and I'll add that line for that chart on there.
Okay.
Good idea, anyway. And I'll just write does not apply if it's something that has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
Other than that.
All right, so, Doug, you want to talk about some things?
Yes. I was hoping, I set up prior to the last DBA meeting, a lot of information about non-compliant lots, definitions, who's authorized to do it, what dimensional standards, in my opinion, I thought applied, and see if we could come to an agreement or an understanding of those definitions so that we avoid what happened with the puck. I think that probably we're all in agreement that we don't want to have non-compliant lots created.
Right. Yeah, but the issue will be, in that particular case, why is a flagpole lot or a flag lot non-compliant?
Right.
Okay.
And I think we're probably in agreement that you create one either through a subdivision, or you could actually create one with a lot amendment, if you will.
That's how this one was created, essentially, yeah. Or was it a subdivision?
It was a subdivision.
Oh, yeah, because we carved off an entire separate...
Correct.
Yeah, yes, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yep.
I think that we can agree that the dimensional standards and the dimensional standard table that apply to lots are the acreage, lot size, shoreline width, and I think we can all agree where the shoreline width is. And I don't think that there's any discussion about an acre being an acre. You know, it is what it is. Which then goes to the definition of lot width, which you and I disagree on. And I'm interested in what the rest of this board, your board, thinks the lot width is. I'll read it again. It's the distance between the side lot lines measured parallel to the front lot line and a distance from the front lot line equal to the front yard specified for the district. For purposes of new building construction, and in the case the lot width is measured above is substandard, and in the case all other dimensional standard requirements of the lot are prescribed by this article or satisfied, the lot width shall be measured at a length defined as parallel to and 15 feet from the front of the proposed structure as it is oriented to the front lot line. My interpretation, if the lot is empty, you use the distance from the front line. If the lot has a proposed building on it and it doesn't meet that width standard, then you can use the 15-foot.
Where does that interpretation come from? I'm looking for text.
I'm looking at the text.
And the text doesn't say anything about that. It just says, in the event that you know there isn't a structure on it, therefore you can't measure from the front of the structure. And in the event that if you were to put a structure 60 feet from the road or 100 feet or whatever the magic number is, that you wouldn't be wide enough there, you could put a structure someplace else on the lot and measure it 15 feet in front of that from the side lots.
Once it's proposed.
Pardon me?
Once the structure is proposed.
And if there's no structure at all and there's no proposal?
Then you use...
Why? Why does it say... I don't know where you get...
The first sentence.
The first sentence says from a structure that's already there.
No, it does not.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, then you want to disallow flag lots.
No.
Well, then you're making it impossible to create them because you're saying they're all non-compliant.
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
Me, on that whole thing with Putman's, to me, the non-compliance issue is the trailer. The access, it's 25 foot or whatever wide, the flag portion of it that comes off of the...
Main road.
Washington Square off the main road goes right next to that mobile home that Nick Meredith lives in,
yeah, but
and it does not meet any setbacks there.
I don't know that you know that without actually getting out surveying equipment and measuring it from the drawing. You can't look at where the road is in reality and say, oh, that should be in the flagpole section of the lot, because it might not be there. You'd actually have to go out and see. You know, I have to trust Chris Foss or whoever did that drawing, that what he drew there accurately represents the plot as it is today.
And it doesn't meet it.
How do you know?
That's the drawing that he did. That's what we're going off of.
I know, but what you're saying, that the width, which was supposed to be, he stated was 60 feet, you're saying it's much narrower than that.
The 60 feet is not the issue. It's where the adjacent lot to the right is.
Okay.
It's right up against a structure that's there. So it doesn't meet any setback requirement.
It made the lot non-conforming where Nick Meredith's trailer is.
Right.
And we shouldn't be making a non-conforming lot where Nick Meredith's trailer is.
And it says in here that all buildings and structures should be labeled with setbacks, blah, 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 blah. And I specifically said to Charlie when he came here that day, are the sanitations and wells labeled with setbacks?
hang on with that a minute. The lot line on the right was always there, was always the boundary of a property, forever, that, you know, that Putman owned. So if there's any setback violation,
it already existed
on the other lot. That house is too close, or that trailer is too close to the lot line. It's not on Putman to have to...
But it creates the only way into that property now.
Yeah, I'm not...
Because Dick separated his house from that parcel.
And I'm not sure what we'd want to do, because...
It would have been easier if he just told what the intent was, to give it to his son Stanley, and...
But I don't know why that matters to us.
Yeah, we don't know any of that.
I don't know that we want to get involved with, oh, you're doing it for your son, well, then it's okay. Or you're doing it, you know, to benefit...
Or we could have just asked to have that flag cut off.
Yeah, but that cuts off 8 acres right in the middle of the town of developable land. And I don't know what he's got planned in his lifetime or his kids in his lifetime.
Developable is determined if we think we're creating non-conforming lots or not.
Yeah, I know, but it's an 8-acre lot in a zoning district that only requires 25,000 square feet per lot.
I'm not arguing that. I understand where you're coming from. But we have to have a definition that we're going to all go by at some point. And that, you know, when you look at the road frontage requirement, it doesn't meet it.
So you're saying you agree with my interpretation?
Yeah, he does. Unanimity on this board.
I don't agree with that. I think you should be able to create your flag lot. And if you just want to go out there and look at the birds... You should be able to go out there and look at the birds. If you want to build a house on it, then you're going to have to build the house in the part of the lot where it's wide enough and you have enough setbacks.
Certainly.
That's what I think.
Or further subdivided or whatever, yeah. I mean, that's something you do down the road.
Right. I don't think we should make flag lots illegal. And I think that's what you're proposing.
I'm not even saying I would have rejected it. I'm saying it should have been considered as an area variance because it didn't meet the dimensional standards. Because we have approved lot subdivisions for areas and then submitted them to the planning board for review. But that was done under the old code. It was done when John Dusler was the code enforcer, and I didn't realize it at the time. He wrote a denial notice saying to the applicant, I don't approve this, so I'm not even going to submit it to the planning board until you get an area variance. I don't know where in the code he came up with that. When Jennifer first approached me about this potential subdivision, I said, from what I can see in the code, you are the traffic cop. It should go to the planning board for them to look at. I hope that it would be identified as a non-complying lot, at which time they would say it needs to go to the ZBA for approval for an area variance, and if they approve it, bring it back to the planning board.
So what would your area variance would have said if it was approved?
The one case that we had, I know we put criteria on it. I haven't gone back to look. I think, Frank, you might have actually put the stipulation on it. But it goes, you recall, it's the three lots got split up on...
South Shore Road?
South Shore Road.
Not Chaplinsky. Not Chaplinsky.
Yeah, I thought it was Chaplinsky.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
maybe I can pull it up.
That was before they...
Yeah, but I had some older...
Okay.
There's a stipulation that they couldn't build in the...
certain parts.
Right. So many feet back in.
Yep.
But that was because it was zoned differently, wasn't it?
It was part of it, too. Yep.
Split zoning.
It was split zoning as well.
Okay, well...
But the reason it got the area variance was because the front... It wasn't meeting the site lot width.
Yeah, but I thought the issue with Chaplinsky was because it was like in two different zones. So can we go to a hypothetical one where somebody wants to do a flag lot, and what would your area variance say to that person? Okay, so no, you can't do a flag lot, so what's your area variance going
to
say if you
it would probably stipulate that the structure needed to be built in the wide portion of the...
But doesn't it already say this? Like, you're not going to be able to build a house in the 50-foot...
Well, you could. Maybe a shotgun.
Well, no, because the code office should shoot that down and go for a building permit.
You wouldn't have enough room to build it in the pole.
The setbacks,
flag.
Right?
Pole. Yeah. Well, you could build, in a 50-foot, you could build a 10-foot-wide house.
Yeah.
I think you'd be stupid if you did.
You could do a 20.
Yeah.
You could do a
20. Oh, is it 15 feet? I thought it was 20 feet.
In a 60, I think you could do a 20-foot-wide house.
Okay. Here's, and let me share the philosophical part of this with you, because I think this is important. And maybe we need... to have some specific language in the ordinance about flag lots or whatever, but I'll postpone that for now. One of the things that has me animated about this is the difference in the domain of our two boards. The planning board lives in the domain of that which is permissible. So we approve projects that are allowed under the zoning ordinance. The Zoning Board of Appeals lives in the domain of the not permissible. So you grant exceptions on a case-by-case basis. So kicking flag lots axiomatically automatically over to the Zoning Board of Appeals says to me that they're not allowed.
Correct. I agree. And I don't agree with that. I agree with what you said, but I don't agree
yeah.
they should be kicked to the,
yeah.
to the Zoning Board.
Okay.
Personally, that's what I think.
And maybe we want to have more discussion and probably involve the town board in it about what we want to do about those things. Because honestly, in this particular case, Putman, we probably wasted more oxygen talking about it than either of the landowners really care about it. They'll probably never look at that property again, you know, for years. Who knows? But, you know, we at least the light goes off and maybe we should be looking at what the implications are elsewhere in the town and deal with it now before an application comes before us.
Well, and that was really the purpose of the
yeah.
town. Because as far as I'm concerned, Putman's done.
Yeah.
And it's water over the dam. But I think we need to be prepared for what happens next, if the next time happens.
Yeah.
Okay. I know how important it feels. I'd like to bring up two others.
Okay.
We recently had an application where the first time we talked about bulk.
About what?
Bulk. Building bulk.
Oh, bulk, yeah, okay.
So can you just, is that a problem if you keep the mass down, or?
I'm team safe.
Okay.
I know
you're 6 feet away from everybody. I'm just saying. You're muffled and I can't exactly zone in on what you're saying.
Oh, see, my excuse is I'm deaf and I don't want to.
Well, it might be mine too.
During the course of the discussion, the applicant brought to light that he was talking about putting in a basement, which I had noticed and hadn't seen in the original design. And I said, well, you just increased the bulk some more. And we debated it, and we went ahead and we approved it, and we submitted it to the ABA for the application, because it's an increase in the bulk within 75 feet of the setback, of the lakefront, okay? You can't increase bulk of a structure within 75 feet of the waterfront, lakefront, without an area variance. There were other things as well, but that was one of the criteria. It was mentioned to me that they didn't think that bulk should include the area below the grade.
That, you're getting into an engineering area now, because generally when you count square feet, you don't count the basement. And I could see, and now...
Unless it's living space.
What is the difference?
Well, yeah,
and
the
then
bulk.
It meets the 3 foot by 4 foot
yeah.
opening.
I'm trying to... Oh, it is there. Okay.
I'll share it with the whole group.
And it's not called out in the ordinance, and I'll be honest with you, we have never had to use the term in any application before so far.
Density square footage.
I said, bulk is mentioned in the ordinance, we have never had to deal with it in an application before us.
And we have, as the zoning board of appeals, been negligent, because it kind of was brought to my attention after we approved one, and said, somebody said, you know, you really should have considered bulk on this, it probably would have gotten approved anyway. So I did some reading on it. And when I look at it, it says it's the size, volume, area, and shape of the buildings and structures, and the physical relationship of the exterior walls. So to me, that means if I took the roof off and I started putting sand in, I don't want to put water because it might leak. I'm going to put sand in, however the volume of sand is that goes into that building, all the way to the basement, counts as bulk. And I also used the example of what you used with Jennifer with regard to wetlands and calculation of area. Don't read something in there if it's not here. It doesn't say exclude.
No, it doesn't. And it's the only, and I agree with you, because I'm a big into take the text literally the way it's written. Don't read stuff into it that you don't see or that's not there. The only thing I would say, and what my suggestion would be, is to call Scott Hensy, because it may be a commonly accepted practice in the planning business to, like in an engineering or real estate, where you don't count the square foot of the basement in telling what the square foot of the house is.
Right.
That may be one of those things that just everybody knows. So, you know, talk to him, and he says, oh, no, it should, or, oh, no, you shouldn't count the basement. At least you've got something defensible to go on in terms of, you know, if it's common practice, well, then so be it. There's no reason to go against that unless we as a town think there is.
The other was a philosophical question. Yesterday's interpretation involved an application that was approved, and the paperwork that was submitted for the application fell negligently short of the list of things that it says in the ordinance should be supplied. When I questioned the two code officers that were present, I said, just out of curiosity, I know that from looking at this, you've done something like 270 plus applications. So you're telling me that all 270 applications have all of these pieces of paper associated with it? And of course the answer to that question was no. Things like septic system survey, things like that. Obviously, if you're putting a second story on a garage, you don't need to have something like that. If you're replacing a porch, you don't need information like that, but the ordinance says you do. The ZBA and the planning board have verbiage in their application processes, which basically say the boards have the ability to decide whether or not everything on the list needs to be presented for an application. And you can waive it and say, no, I don't need that for this application. There is no such language with regard to what's in there for the code enforcement officers. They're basically taking it upon themselves to determine, well, you know, I really don't need that for this application.
Yeah, and
which creates problems.
Yeah. And you're right. Some of the things are like that you just mentioned are common sense. And certainly code office has technical expertise. They ought to have that common sense. Sometimes Jennifer will call me and say, do we need this? And I'll take it on myself to say, you know, no, we don't need a wet stamp, for example, for that information. But then it always comes up again in the meeting, because we have to determine if the application is complete. And part of that is not only reviewing whether we've got, and I'm sure the language exists for the ZBA too. Maybe it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
But for like site plan review, there's a list of, at a minimum, the application should include this unless we waive some of it. We could also request other information as well. And, you know, that's part of determining whether the application is complete. And we put off Dollar General, I believe we put off two or three times, or maybe it was the firehouse, I don't remember which one, but about that time of the year.
General.
Yeah, we put off until we got more information. Then we said, okay, it's all here now. Now the clock starts. And, yeah, I think you got to have that latitude. Otherwise, you end up just doing foolish stuff for no reason at all. And it just makes people question what the legitimacy of the process.
Yeah, so should we recommend that a sentence be added to the zoning ordinance that gives them the latitude to do that? Or are we just going to let them continue to do it on common sense?
Well, here's like a compromise that I would suggest that doesn't involve modifying the zoning ordinance. If you read in here for both, all the processes that are involved, so as a zoning appeal, special use permit, SPR, subdivision, there's a list of things that are required. I would make that as part of the checklist, okay? And I will say it's okay for you to put not applicable if in your technical judgment it doesn't make any sense. We may decide otherwise, and that's fine, okay? We can do that at the meeting, and we don't have a problem doing that. We define it sooner or later as we go through the application. But at least then, if it's all there, you go through, and at least we know, okay, well, at least you looked at the list, and you made a determination that some of the stuff wasn't relevant. I'm okay with that. We'll revisit it at the meeting.
I guess my only question with that is if we have requirements for each of those processes that you should have written in here, and then we go through to see if it's a complete packet, is it a complete packet or is it not a complete packet?
Yes, because we're allowed to waive certain requirements. And there's certain things, I'm trying to think of a good example. But let's take, for example, a residence. So it's not a commercial property. It's not somebody that's got deep pockets and a fleet of engineers to do work. I want to put a dock in, but what about the setbacks? I have a 100-foot wide lot. I'm going to put it smack dab in the middle of the lot. That, to me, is enough information that the code office can make sure they don't encroach on the setbacks. There's not going to be, I don't need to have an engineering drawing that's down to the millimeter in accuracy telling me where it's going to be. We have enough information that we know the intent, we know that the code office is going to look at it, we don't have to require an engineering drawing for that. If it's Dollar General, I want an engineering drawing. I want to know all the details.
I guess the flip side of that is if it comes to a policing action where they said they were going to do this, they did something different, and then where are we?
Then it's a policing action. I'm going to tell you a little story because this is in a nearby town. A friend of mine called me who lives in the town. This is down in, not Glen, Mohawk, okay? It was on Stoner Trail Road. They're building a big solar farm down there. They went through the same thing, a year of site plan review where they reviewed what was going to go on, included all the switching equipment on the site. It was supposed to be far, far back corner. My friend, he works from home. He looks out the window one day, and they're putting up these 90-foot switch towers right in front of his house. And he goes nuts. And, he calls National Grid, for starters. It's like, yeah, we're not doing anything. We're not going to move anything, even though it's not what was approved. Well, the town issued a stop work order and basically said, yeah, we're going to make you go through the whole site plan review again and let you do what was on the site plan review. Funny how that works.
Yeah,
and that language exists in our ordinance.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've done a site plan review and they've approved and they've done the permits and you go out there and see that's not what they're doing, you can do a stop work order right there. The only thing what you've been talking about is the existing language for all of the processes for our two boards. My point was, there's a list of 12 items that are required for a zoning building permit. And they're really not all required for a permit.
For a building.
Really, there's not language in there that says to the code enforcement officer, yeah, you can look at that list and say, nah, I don't need to have the grading plan for this because you're not going to be doing any grading.
Right.
But it doesn't tell them that.
No. But you can pay Chris Foss to come around and do one of these things with his stick. And yeah, and what are you going to do with that information? I mean, that's the thing that I thought they had the discretion to waive some of those requirements if they weren't pertinent to the project.
Yeah, it's not in there like it is for zoning board and for
the. It's in ours, but not in the.
Yeah, that's my point.
And I guess to what extent does the zoning ordinance design the processes for the code enforcement office? It tells them the law and what they have to achieve. I'm not sure how much you can say it tells them how to achieve that.
It certainly made it for a difficult interpretation.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And a lot of the things that we have to decide where, what, and go have to do with Department of Health measurements.
Yes. Well, and building codes that aren't any of our purview either.
And with discretion comes some issues, because that application last night, as you'll see in the minutes, a code enforcement officer said, no, you don't need a sanitation plan for the single-family dwelling. You can do that later.
You can do that later. He didn't say, no, you don't need one. He said, you can do
so
it later.
So discretion cuts both ways. You give them discretion, or they assume they have discretion, and somebody builds a single-family dwelling with no septic plan.
Yeah, but that tells me that the code officer, who I guess shall not be named Jennifer Plummers, you know, that the code officer deliberately is not assessing whether the septic system is sufficient for the structure. He can't, because he doesn't have any of the information he needs.
Which is why we issued an interpretation that said that the permits that were issued need to be revoked until such time as the information is provided.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with the code officer taking a sketch on a napkin that's got volumes and area and stuff like that, materials, and saying, yeah, okay, I understand what you're doing. This more than meets it. Using his professional knowledge to do that. To simply say you don't need it and I'm not going to look at it, I don't get that at all.
Well, I think I obviously made a mistake not taking into the consideration of the sanitation system. So he just didn't.
He said he'd do it later.
Yeah, well,
but you can't issue a building permit.
That's kind of
that. Right. We covered that.
Yeah.
We took care of that last night.
Like, if you put a guest cottage on your, like, if I put a guest cottage on my property because I have 5 lots, not only would I have to combine my lots, I would also have to submit a revamp of my sanitation system, an engineered plan, because I am adding 2 bedrooms in that guest cottage. And it has to be engineered.
Yep, sure. Yep.
There's no way around it.
Right. Yes.
I can't tell you this lateral goes here and... Yeah,
no, and I don't know, that to me is strictly an engineering domain. I don't know if every code office in the state has the expertise to do that. I mean, none of you have a PE license and have the ability to wet stamp a drawing.
No, they got to bring the drawings.
I know, so you're relying on their expertise to tell you that it's okay. I'd say go to a town like... or a city, but like a town like Gilderland or Clifton Park, my bet is they have an engineer on staff who's capable of doing that stuff. Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, if we include all the information, everything on the list, is something that the reviewing body, whether it's the zoning or the planning, can look at and see if it was provided, that's ultimately the second check on the code enforcement, right?
Yes.
It says you're going to have a, you know, calculations on your septic load. And if it's a blank spot or says not applicable, then there's somebody else.
I think we would catch that in a site plan review. The problem is no residential development requires, well, maybe some do, but it's very, very rare that something like that would require a site plan review. Simply building a house on an empty lot, that's by right, code office handles all that. We never see it.
No, understood. But yeah. If the list, like she's talking about doing, which I think is excellent, if that matrix is out there with all the little boxes, you get to look at the little boxes as you go by, and it's like, yeah, you're right, you don't need that.
Yeah, yeah.
But as long as it's there, it's not there, then,
yeah,
you know, you don't have the opportunity to review it and say, well, wait a minute. So I think it's an excellent addition to the...
I do, too.
Information required.
Done?
You sure?
Motion to adjourn.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Do we have to vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carried.